Well, hello everyone and welcome back. Today is Friday, October 16th, 2015. My name is Angela Walton and this is the African Roots Podcast. Remember, you can always reach me at africanrootspodcast@gmail.com. Well, everyone, guess what? I am coming to you today from Richmond, Virginia. That's right. I am here for the 36th annual conference of AAHGS, which we know as AAHGS, for the annual conference of the Afro-American Historical and Genealogical Society. I am so excited to be here, and my goodness, there must be at least 350 people plus from everywhere in the country, from California to the East Coast, New England, as far south as Florida, South Carolina, Texas, even Oklahoma, and of course, my home state of Arkansas. I'm so excited to see people from everywhere, and this has been the largest conference ever in the history of the society, so it's really exciting to be here. As I said, I came down yesterday, driving down with some good friends from Maryland, from Baltimore, Maryland area, and wow, this is just going to be so excited, and I'm quite honored. I'm going to be speaking three times, and I'm starting out in just a few hours. I'm going to be giving a presentation on Native American genealogy from Virginia to New England to the Western frontier. I'm really excited about that, and it's an honor to be here. And I'm also going to be speaking tomorrow on databases and search engines for African American genealogy. And I am really thrilled to be here with a colleague, Tony Carrier, many of you know, from Low Country Africana. She and I are going to be presenting something on mapping the Freedmen's Bureau. And we're going to be talking to Tony, who is our special guest today, in just a few moments. And, of course, other things are also happening in the genealogy world. I want to remind people, by the way, don't forget, next week, I'm talking 2 days, October 21st and 22nd. Don't forget the NARA, the National Archives and Record Administration Virtual Genealogy Fair. You can attend, all of you can attend, no matter where you are, because it is all going to be online. And this is particularly exciting. I mentioned it last week. All of these are going to be live video stream that you'll be able to watch from your own device on YouTube. And it's going to be everything from looking at finding ancestral migration routes to archival databases, also finding your World War I veteran at the National Archives in St. Louis. That's something that's really of interest to me, having had two ancestors who served in World War I. My grandfather served in the 809th Pioneer Infantry. Very anxious to see if there are any records that are there. And I had another ancestor who, in fact, died in France, and his mother was a Gold Star mother. Anyway, I'm really fascinated and looking forward to that. Women in wartime, civilian government employment, that should be really exciting. I've been very interested in women, particularly women, and the let alone records that document women who served in the Civil War as nurses, matrons, laundresses, and cooks, all kinds of things that are there. And some of these are going to be, these topics will be live streamed online next week. So you do want to definitely participate, and I'll put a link for you on the podcast website about that as well. Also, a little bit of news. Many of us use slave narratives, and of course we're familiar with them, but a lot of you are not familiar with the Southern University slave narratives. Well, they are now online, and you can listen to them, and you can read them, and they talk about everything from their experiences. They're a little bit more frank than some of the ones that you typically read on some of the other sites that have them digitized, so you do want to take a look at those. This is coming out of Southern University and their library collection there. Also coming up, for those of you in the Mid-Atlantic area, coming from the Maryland State Archives. There's going to be, actually coming up in a few days, next week, one of their frequent brown bag lunches, documenting freedom, certificates of freedom and manumissions, looking at how to find those really rare and precious documents that do document the early days of freedom. And of course, we all have brick walls, and I encourage you to find out what your own state archives has in terms of genealogical workshops or research strategies. There's going to be a brick wall session at the Maryland State Archives in Annapolis also coming up. That will be on the 24th of October. So certainly things do still unfold for us as much as possible. And of course, I'm just so thrilled to be here, as I said, in Richmond. And of course, as a special treat, I have a special guest with me. And many of you, if you are not familiar with Lowcountry Africana, you should be. If you research ancestors from the area referred to frequently as the Lowcountry, meaning the area around South Carolina, Charleston in particular, Savannah, the coastals, sea islands, where the Gullah Geechee people, their culture certainly is preserved and celebrated there. Following that chain of islands all the way down to northern Florida, in fact, all of that is considered the Lowcountry. And with me today is a special guest and also my co-presenter on Saturday, Tony Carrier. Welcome to the African Roots Podcast.
Thank you.
Well, I'm so thrilled that you're here with us. Tony, what's bringing you here to Richmond, Virginia?
Well, I'm excited to be here at OGS, and it's all wonderful always to get together with everybody at least once a year, so that's fabulous. But you and I are going to present on Saturday on the new site that we built, Mapping the Freedmen's Bureau,
yes,
which is a map-based interface and finding aid to connect researchers to Freedmen's Bureau microfilms online.
That is correct. Now, you did mention, and I do know that you have spoken at OX conferences before. You were in Pittsburgh last year, is that correct?
Yes.
How was Pittsburgh?
It was wonderful.
Okay.
It was well attended, and
okay,
the weather was beautiful. It was very nice.
Well, one of the things that I do know, and I have heard Tony present in the past. She is a fabulous storyteller. In case you don't know, you will find that out if you have the chance to attend her session. But I know that you have a fascination for some of the stories that come out of those records.
I do.
And in fact, if you do research the Lowcountry, just even in passing, you're encouraged to take a look at the website Lowcountry Africana anyway, particularly because some amazing stories and records really come forth from that. You've been looking at this part of the country for some time, is that correct?
Yes.
In fact, how long have you been working with Lowcountry Records?
12 years.
Oh my gosh, okay. So you're more than familiar then. Do you have things that you would say are favorites, or maybe, as we know with Freedmen's Bureau, there are all kinds of types of records, from labor contracts to cohabitation records to transportation records to settling disputes, letters. What would you say, what record type stands out to you? Where do you get most of your stories from?
There are several sources. One of the things that I really like about the Freedmen's Bureau record set is that there's a generation of elders listed in that record set that may not have lived to be listed in the 1870 census.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of what we like to concentrate on at Lowcountry Africana is breaking through the 1870 brick wall.
Right.
So we can concentrate on post-emancipation records between 1865 and 1870, tracking them down, digitizing them, etc. But the Freedmen's Bureau's records are just such a great record set for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to look at rations lists.
Okay.
Because if you look at times of crisis and food insecurity, it's a very old, very young and the infirm
who
vulnerable. Cannot fend for themselves. And so, there, for instance, there's one record from Monk's Corner that lists 180 elders from 120 plantations.
Wow.
And so them 80, 90, 100 years old. That's another generation.
That is.
Than
that
the generation
is.
That we're seeing in the 1870 census for the most part.
That's interesting because as you're saying that, I'm thinking here's a record created in the 1860s and you're looking at people who were born in the 1760s.
Yes.
Which, wow, we don't often think of that. And as you clearly pointed out, many of these individuals would not have necessarily lived as long as 1870, so they would not have been enumerated. Yet individuals find their family in 1870 and never know who the parents were of the heads of the household.
That's
but
right.
You're looking at them on some of those records.
That's right. And, you know, the Freedmen's Bureau records, for those elders of advanced age that are listed there, it may be the only time after 1865 that they were listed with a first name and a surname.
And a surname.
So that a so that a descendant can identify them in the records.
Now, I had a chance to attend your session in Nashville. That was, what, 2 or 3 years ago. And I was intrigued with some of the stories that you were pulling out. Do you get most of the stories when you follow a situation maybe where an applicant put in a complaint to the Bureau and then you find another series of records that tell you how the story ended or what the outcome was? How do you put that together? Is there a method that you have?
It depends. It depends upon, first of all, how what record you discover and how much detail is in there. You know, some detail that you find may point in one direction to one part of the Freedmen's Bureau records or may point to another. I think that presentation in Nashville mostly concerned the Low Country being sort of ground zero for Sherman's Special Field Order 15.
Correct.
Right. And sort of all of the events that unfolded around that over time.
Well, speaking of that particular field order, and many people are not necessarily aware that this was a field order that was, I guess, sent out that was promising land. And what was it, within 30 miles, I guess, from the coast?
Of the coastline.
Then, of the coastline. And then I don't know how far it was to extend, how far southward. But since that time, however, many people nationally have been under an impression that everybody was going to get the 40 acres and a mule.
Right.
From what you see with the records, was there an expectation among people who lived, particularly in that region that it really did include, did they expect that? Kind of.
Yes, I was just reading a record the other night from Upper South Carolina, and it was a narrative report from one of the agents reporting to his superior, and the Low Country records speak about this too. People started flocking to the coast because it was the sea islands they were set aside for homesteading, and so the agent who was in Upper South Carolina was saying that one of his biggest struggles was trying to keep people in place where they were because
right.
they wanted to go to the coast, and he knew from what was going on over there, his quote was, nothing but starvation awaits them there.
Oh, wow.
Because so many people flocked in there, and the government had a very difficult time getting enough rations in there. Etc. So
that's very, very interesting. Mm-hmm. One doesn't necessarily think of how much movement there was during that time. One of the things that I have found, occasionally, I research farther west, but I'm often intrigued at how one finds transportation records. But you're talking about a different kind of movement. They're going east. They're going towards the coast, which is different still.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we scratch the surface when we're dealing with Freedmen's Bureau records because we really don't understand the complexity and the aftermath of war and just the turbulent time in which these records were generated as well. So Wow, this is absolutely incredible. Do you have any, I guess, unique stories that have happy endings? Because sometimes I see stories, well, they're open-ended, and you're wondering, okay, someone is trying to get their child who's still being held as, quote-unquote, an apprentice, but it was really a child being held in bondage, or someone looking for someone, or someone seeking to be paid for a crop that they raised in a sharecropping system, but they were never paid. Do you find any stories that at least give you a certain degree of relief that there was a satisfactory end?
I do. There's one that comes to mind immediately where a man had written that his son was being held by a former slaveholder against his will and against his father's will, and the agent was able to enforce and get the child back, mostly because he had military force with which he could compel the owner to send him. But the way that he worded his statement to the planter was really something. He said, "Sir, you will return the child to Mr. So-and-so and have nothing further to do with him. You will also give him sufficient rations and clothing to last for the rest of the winter." And then he really put some teeth into it in a very subtle way. He said, "I expect you to do this without me having to send troops over there to do it." And sure enough, the child was returned. And
interesting.
Yes, with provisions.
Wow.
So, yes, you do see those stories.
Okay. Well, yeah. Because sometimes you see them and you just hope that it was resolved.
Yeah.
Because you don't necessarily find the reply to the letter.
Right.
Or you know, sometimes you may, but sometimes you really don't find out what happened. Mm-hmm. So that is something that is very, very interesting. Well, of course, you and I are going to talk about the mapping site.
Yes.
And for those who don't know, the mapping site is a site that stemmed out of what I thought was a one-time project when I decided to find an old map of Arkansas, and I just put red dots on a map just showing where the various field offices were. And thanks to your insistence, Tony, it was suggested, and after you twisted both of my arms, we ended up mapping the whole South. And I'm so glad that we did. I guess when you first made that suggestion, I'm curious, did you think we would really do it? I remember when you first made the suggestion, I thought to myself, is she crazy? She doesn't know what I went through to map the 23 little spots in Arkansas. Did you think it would really happen?
Well, I remember how it evolved. We were talking about it, and we were talking about how difficult it is because every single researcher had to, first of all, go to the descriptive pamphlet
if
they could find it.
That's right.
And then look on a map to see which one of those field offices was closest to their area of research interest. And then they had to look and see if that where that microfilm was available or if that microfilm was online. So Angela and I were talking, you know, and chatting, and we said, why doesn't somebody just once and for all just, you know, make a map interface like you just made for Arkansas? And then we both slapped ourselves in the head because we were like, oh my God, did we just say that? Because we realized that we
it
were somebody.
It had to be done.
We qualified for somebody. I don't think we knew what we were getting into. It was
seriously.
Part of a year.
And I kept thinking, well, actually, I'm so glad because you had found that app that could be, you know, put on the WordPress site that made it not just easy to do, but it made it accurate geographically.
Yeah.
And to have found that particular tool that interfaced with Google Maps and made it just geographically to the exact precise point on the map made it truly remarkable. How would you explain the fact, and people have asked me this question, and I'll let you answer it, how would you explain the fact that we have multiple maps on the site. The site is called mappingthefreedmansbureau.com, but we have more than the Freedmen's Bureau. And why do we have more than one map?
Well, it grew organically.
Yep.
We started mapping the field offices, and then we're seeing that on the same landscape, interacting with the same ancestors, were other institutions. You have the Freedmen's Bank. Even within the Freedmen's Bureau, there were different branches that an ancestor may have been served by. The Freedmen's Hospital.
Yes.
And the contraband camp.
Yes.
Et cetera. So it sort of made sense to map all those different things if we were going to map the first phase of freedom.
Right.
So that's how it just sort of grew and grew. And then Angela, you mapped the USCP battle site.
That's right. That's
and
right.
The Freedman School.
Right.
And who knows? It may continue to grow.
Yeah, well, and that's the part I guess I found so interesting. And since then, I have found several other kinds of maps now that people are mapping various aspects of the freedom story. And I'm just thrilled to see it. I like maps anyway, and was so thrilled that you found that tool. And of course, we can all use this tool to tell different parts of our own story. And I do know that my goal, and I know is certainly a goal that you share, is to get people to get to those records.
Yes.
Now, that's a feature of the mapping site.
Yes.
You do point them to the records. Talk about that just a little bit in terms of pointing to the records.
Okay. When we first started the project, like it took us about a year to develop the whole thing before we launched it. But when we first started, not all of the microfilms were online.
True.
Because Family Search had not yet posted the whole collection. So we knew some of them were on Internet Archive and some of them were on Family Search. And so instead of each individual researcher having to go through this process to find out which was the nearest office and then find out if the microfilm was online,
right.
We just went ahead and did that research. And so now you can click on a map icon and a little info box pops up like you're used to looking at on Google Maps.
Right.
And it tells you which field offices serve that area.
Right.
And then we have a live link, a direct link, to where the microfilm resides online. So you click that link, it takes you right over to Family Search or Internet Archive, wherever the resource is, and then you can start reading.
Can you talk about also the finding aid, the descriptive pamphlets a little bit?
We have the descriptive pamphlets up on the site that can be accessed, and we have them for all the states that were served by the Freedmen's Bureau. And the descriptive pamphlet is a detailed, reel-by-reel description of what is on that microfilm. And even after the records are indexed, if you want to know about what's going on in your ancestors' area at the time, the best thing you do is still go to that descriptive pamphlet and go and seek out those records. For instance, narrative report of operations, where the agents are reporting to their superiors of what was going on every single month.
Right.
During the time that in the first phase of freedom. So those are on the site. You can access them there, pop them open in the new window, and then go back to the map so that you can have the microfilms open and the descriptive pamphlet open in another window side by side. And that will help you also navigate Family Search's collection.
Wow, that's amazing. If a person is new to genealogy, really just starts to play around a little bit, or maybe they haven't gotten that far in their research, any advice that you would give them in terms of why they would want to go and dabble with these records? Someone who says, hey, I've heard something about the Bureau. Should I start there? I know my folks were slaves, and they are from Macon, Georgia. So I'm just getting started. Should I
start going right to Macon field office? What kind of advice would you give a person who's new to that whole research experience, and whether or not or when they should incorporate Freedmen's Bureau records in their research?
Well, it's always best, you know, to work backwards from the information and generations that you know, and gather as much information as you can. But I would say to a beginner, why not go ahead and just jump in there and view those films where your ancestor was? And one of the best records to start with when you're just getting into the record set is labor contracts.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. These were contracts that freedmen signed with planters for wage labor or a share of the crop.
Right,
and
right,
they agreed
right.
to plant the planter's land and then have a division of the crops at the end of the growing year.
Wow.
Well, so everyone who signed that contract is then, you know, attached to that particular plantation in that year.
Right,
and
right.
And so right away, if you spot your ancestor, you can find out where they were
That's
before
true.
1870.
That's right. That is quite correct.
Mm-hmm.
That is quite correct. Well, as we know, there's also an indexing project underway. And I've done a little bit of indexing, need to do certainly some more. And perhaps after my travels are over this week, I will try and get some more indexing done. Would you encourage people to participate in that endeavor, in that indexing initiative?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
The indexing those records is going to be one of the greatest boons for African American genealogy research. In the last at least 10 years.
Oh, clearly, yes, I would agree with that.
It's such an enormously important mm-hmm. record set, and if you do find an ancestor listed there, then you can sort of zoom in on an area to
yes.
concentrate on,
yes.
and then do further research in the records beyond the index.
Oh, wow, I share that sentiment as well. Well, oh my goodness, we're getting a little bit short of time here. Any parting words that you'd have to say about either the record set or the website, Mapping the Freedmen's Bureau, or of LowCountryAfricana.com as well? Any parting words?
I would say that just a little hint that we redesigned the Low Country Africana website. We haven't officially announced it yet.
Okay. Oh.
Podcast.
Okay. You heard it here, folks. You heard it here first, folks, right?
Right. But we've completely redesigned it. What we were hearing from our readers in feedback was the site was, the old site was difficult to navigate.
Okay.
So when we redesigned it with that in mind. So it's a more visual browsing to the areas that
mm-hmm.
you're interested in. So you don't have to go through a series of menus in order to get to records.
Ah, okay, right.
So,
interesting.
So, yeah, so have a sneak peek. We probably won't announce it for about 2 weeks. So it's been a soft launch right now.
Oh, wow. Well, and how can people reach you, Tony?
At info or Tony, either one,
mm-hmm.
at lowcountryafricana.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you going any other place after this conference? Is this the last one of
this
the year?
This is the last one of the year.
Okay.
This year has been so busy that I'm really, I have to say I'm happy that it's the last one of the year because we really want to beef up the website now that we've reorganized it.
Yeah.
We're going to be adding a lot of records between now and the end of the year.
Fantastic. Well, we're all looking forward to that. Tony Carrier, thank you so much for being a guest on the African Roots Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Wow, this has been wonderful. Well, everyone, it is time to wind it down for a week. Certainly, I thank those of you who have been sharing things with me, and that's greatly appreciated. And again, this is Angela Walton Raji, and you can always reach me at AfricanRootsPodcast@gmail.com. And in the meantime, have a wonderful week. I'm looking forward to this weekend. Have a great week of research, and remember to keep researching, keep documenting, and always keep sharing what you find. Have a great week. Be well and be safe, and I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.